Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Yishai Fleisher Show, broadcasting live from the King David Lounge at JFK Airport. That's right. I am always committed to continuing to broadcast and to schmooze with you from wherever I am. That's true most of the time. And now I'm in this little dark room at the King David Lounge, which is the gold and up member of the El Al community. And I'm flying out of JFK and back home in just a little bit. So I thought that it'll be fun to record here. I'm pretty exhausted, and that's because I've just been part of Chevron's campaign, a 24-hour campaign of matching to raise $1 million. And it was quite the arduous and awesome experience, but I got to reconnect with a lot of friends, and I got to talk to a lot of people and what's up with a lot of people. And the bottom line is we raised the money and it was beautiful. I flew, actually, it's a very, very tight trip. I flew out of Israel Sunday night. I got here Monday morning, and now it's Wednesday night, and I'm flying home to get home Thursday night and then to tour an important group on Friday in Hebron. So it's quite the quiet. It's quite the quiet, and I am pretty tired. And I even got a chance to see some snow, which is always fun. And one of the things that I really like about the snow on this trip was that I was right in front of a burger joint, and that burger joint was called Joseph's Dream Burgers. So I think it's Joseph's Dream Burgers, or it's Joseph's Dream Burgers, like a burger of Joseph's dream, or maybe it's Joseph's. I don't know. Maybe he dreamt of burgers, or I don't know, or we're eating the burger of his dream. I'm really not sure. And that's the name of the restaurant. And I took a picture, and that's the name of the show, Joseph's Dream Burgers. And I'm sorry, I caught a little bit of a cold as well. So it's all together. There's snow. I'm in the airport. I'm in the funny little room. And I'm recording my show, trying not to be too loud. And there's some echo in here as well. I'm sorry about all that. But what I could say is that I love you very much, and I thought that it would be important to keep broadcasting. I guess maybe I didn't make it clear that this Torah portion is about Joseph's dreams. And we'll talk about Joseph's dreams a little bit, but I want to actually focus on a few other things. But I thought it was a fitting thing that I saw Joseph's Dream Burgers. I hope that the owners of the restaurant, recognize that it's this week's Parsha that they're going to, that they're naming their whole restaurant after, I guess, their whole livelihood. And I heard the burgers were good, but I didn't have time to get it because I was really quite very busy. I was really even very busy to the point that I didn't get as much chance to read through everything about the Torah portion that is so beautiful and so interesting. And we are now shifting direct. And oh, and by the way, what's going on in the news? I barely have any idea. The last 3 days have been pretty, incommunicado from the news. But I'm sure the Jewish state is moving ahead. And I got a chance, when you disconnect from the news, you get a chance to reconnect with spirituality and to think about our Jewish land and the story of God returning his children to the land of Israel and bringing his presence back to the land of Israel. And when we think about that, we really learn that the beginning of the exile is in this week's Torah portion. The beginning of the going down to Egypt starts now. It starts here. It's the jealousy between the brothers. It's Joseph annoying the brothers and saying bad things about them, bringing slanderous speech against them. On the one hand, to his father Jacob. On the other hand, we're going to see that when it's time to go on this kind of mission to find his brothers, that's exactly what he's looking for. He's looking to reconnect with his brothers. And that's going to be really the whole story, right? It's going to be the rending asunder, the tearing asunder of relationships in the hope of rebuilding it down the line. That is what the tale of of Joseph is really about. It's about seeking the brothers, about brothers hating brothers, about the Jewish people in really sinat chinam, the baseless hate, which leads in the end to galut, to being kicked out of the land, and then the effort to mend those relationships, bring back love, and also come back to the land of Israel. If you think about it, the Joseph tale is about those two things at the same time. It's about love of the brothers, love of the Jewish people, and about the yearning to return to the land of Israel down the line. That's really the double theme of who Joseph is. And I'll be honest with you, for me, Joseph is a challenging character. I don't always like him. You know, I don't always connect to him. When I say like, I mean to say I don't always connect to all the things that he does, and I could see why the brothers would get annoyed with him. Of course, at the same time, when I said that just a second ago, please kind of discount that. I was talking about it for kind of a literary character, but in terms of who Joseph is, he is this incredibly righteous person. And he also, the town that he's connected to, the characteristic of Joseph is connected to a town, and that's Shechem or Shechem. And that, in some way, I'll try to prove it to you, is the sister community of Hebron. It's the sister community, although it's quite a bit of ways, it has a relationship to the town of Hebron. So, first thing is, Joseph has two dreams. They're very famous. You remember that his stalk stands and all the other stalks bow down to him. And he says there, it's your stalks. My stalk stands up and your stalk stalks bow down to me. So that's annoying to the brothers. And then he says that the moon and the sun and 11 stars bow down to me. And the moon and the sun is understood to be Jacob. And then there's a question, who is that moon? There's actually books written on this question of who is the moon that Joseph dreams about? Who exactly represents the moon? Because the moon is kind of the moon you would think would be his mother, but she's passed away. So is it Leah? Who's going to bow down to Joseph? Who's that moon? Or is it one of the handmaidens? So who is the moon? That's a very interesting question. And the 11, the number 11 is like, we know there's only one thing that means that 11, and that's the 11 brothers. And one of my favorite, on Pesach, when we sing about the numbers, you know, starting with 13, when we get to 11, it's Echadasar Kochbaya, which is the 11 stars, the 11 stars are the 11 brothers, and there's kind of no other 11. That's the 11. Like when you think about 11, it's the 11 stars, the 11 brothers that bow down to Joseph. He tells them this dream, and they begin to really, they hate him. They hate him for his words, and they hate him for his dreams. And herein is something that we learn, I guess, to be very cautious with. When you have a talent, when you're special, you got to be careful not to agitate other people with your specialness and kind of show it off. And you get a sense, to me at least, that Joseph is not cautious with this power that he has, with the specialness that he has. He's not careful to show it off and not to agitate others. So on the one hand, he's pushing his brothers away. On the other hand, when the brothers are going to go away to tend the father's sheep. Now, here's some interesting questions. Why are they tending their father's sheep so far away? Because it basically says that Jacob and Joseph were in Hebron. Why are the brothers all the way in Shechem? And I think when you're like a person reading this, like just a piece of literature, you're like, okay. But when you look at the landscape, you're like, why are they like driving? If I would drive today from Hebron to Shechem, it would be like 2 hours, maybe 2.5 hours with traffic. Here, like, it's just a totally different landscape and far away. Why would they go with the sheep all the way out there? That's a mystery to me. And they go out to Shechem, and then they go even a little bit north and maybe a little bit west to the town of Dothan, where eventually they'll throw them in a pit, and there's actually been very large pits found in Dothan. So, just a few verses that I think are worth it to stop and think about. And again, I'm in a funny room right now, and the lighting isn't even so good. They told me the room's out of service because the lights are not working, but that means nobody else is here. There's one verse that I would like for you to focus on with me, and it goes like this. It goes, Jacob says to Joseph, "Vayomer lo lech nara'et shlomachecha ve'et shlomatzon." I can't even see because it's so dark in here. Ve'ashiveni davar v'shlichom v'ash. So please go check out what's going on with your brothers, and if there's peace to them, and also the peace of the flock. Vashiveni davar, and return to me a thing. Tell me, give me a report back. Veshlichehu, and he sent him, Jacob sent him, mi'emek Chevron, v'yavosh Shechem. He sent him from the depth of Chevron, and he came to Shechem, to Shechem. So there's a very famous Rashi, and the Rashi asks, isn't Hebron in the mountains? How could it be in the valley of Chevron when Chevron is actually in the heights, in the mountains? So he says, well, it's not in the valley, it's not in the emek, which means in the depth, but rather mi'etzamuka, from the deep suggestion of he who is buried there, which is Abraham. So he sent him with the deep suggestion of Abraham. What's that deep suggestion? That the galut is going to start at some point, that the exile is going to start. And that's what God told Abraham, that your children are going to be slaves, servants, in a land not theirs, slaves. And this is the beginning of that. Send away Joseph so that it could fulfill the promise that was made to Abraham of going into exile. But notice, and this is what I wanted to point out to you, Hebron, where the tomb of the forefathers and mothers existed already, right? Because who was buried there at the time? Jacob was not buried there. Joseph was not buried there. They were alive. But Abraham and Sarah and Isaac and Rebekah were already buried there. Jacob is alive. His wife Rachel had passed away and she was buried in Bethlehem. But Leah is presumably alive. She's later going to be buried there, but presumably she's alive. But in any case, there's a connection between Chevron, and the next phrase is that he sent them from the depth of Chevron to Shechem. Now Shechem is going to be the burial place of Joseph. Joseph is going to be buried there. And because Joseph is going to be buried there, there's going to be a relationship of like, here's a burial of the kind of next of the forefathers, this like other generation of the forefathers called Joseph. He's buried in Shechem. And he's coming from Hebron, which is the burial place of the forefathers and mothers. Now he gets to Shechem, and guess what he finds there? He finds a man, or a man finds him, right? And he says, "Vimseo ish," a person found him. And he is, guess what? He's going the wrong way in the field. And the man asked him, saying, "Vishaleo ish le'emur." The man said to him, saying, the man asked him, saying, "Mativakesh, what are you looking for, Joseph?" Right? Imagine if somebody just said to you, "Hey, what are you looking for? What are you looking for in life?" And Joseph says, "Vayomer." This is a very famous line, or at least in certain circles, it's a famous line. "Vayomer etachai anochi mevakesh." And he said, "I am searching for my brothers." That's what I'm searching for. In life, I'm searching for my brothers. I annoyed them. I tick them off. I push them away. But I'm actually really searching for them. And then he says something strange. He says, "Tell me, where are they shepherding? Where is the flock? Where are they?" Well, why would this man know anything? Well, because this man is an angel. He's an angel of God. He knows stuff. And he hears stuff. And he's going to tell you that information. But it's important to understand that Joseph recognizes that this man is a man that has a way, a path to tell him. I forgot to tell you one more thing, is that when Jacob, when his father says, go all the way to Shechem by yourself and let me know how it is with the flock. So Joseph says, "Hineni," as in, just like your father, Isaac told Abraham, "I'm ready for my sacrifice." So says Joseph, "I'm ready to be sacrificed. I'm ready to go on this dangerous journey. I'm ready maybe to be sold into slavery. I understand that there's something going on here." He says, "Hineni, I'm here. I'm prepared." In any case, this man is an angel. He gives the information over, and Joseph goes on his way. But guess what? You know the story here. It's not a story of love. It's a story of anger, a story of hate, and a story of almost murdering their own brother. And he's saved finally by Reuven, who does not allow him to be murdered, but also does not really save him from his fate. And his fate is to be taken to exile. Who fails here, who's the real failure here, is Judah. The leader of the brothers does not act like a leader at all. He lets events get out of hand, and he doesn't seem to stop it. And he's going to have to rectify that weakness of character that he had there. And that brings me really to the next section, which is about Judah. Judah marrying first a lady who is a Canaanite, right? And he has three children with her. And he marries off his first son. You know, let me actually take a pause for a second. I'm sorry. I told you I'm sitting here a little bit in the dark, and I skipped over a verse that I think is important, which is that Joseph is sold. And when he's sold, not only is he sold, but a big lie. Oh my gosh, I made another mistake. Actually, Isaac is not dead yet. That's right. The Midrash says that Isaac knew about this whole sale and the whole truth of the business, and he didn't tell Jacob yet. Although we did learn that Isaac did pass away, so I'm wondering how the Midrash understands that. It's probably one of these questions of what comes first and what comes last in the chronological setting of the Bible. Is there Mukdam and Mukhar b'Torah? Is the Torah set chronologically or not? There's different opinions on that. It probably refers to the opinion that it's not set totally chronologically. In any case, after they throw him in the pit, after they sell him, they create a whole lie, a whole elaborate scheme and a lie. That scheme and a lie is to say that Joseph was eaten by a wild animal, and they bring him the Technicolor dream coat, and guess what? It's bloody, and it seems like an animal had devoured him. Jacob refused to be consoled. There's a beautiful medrash that I bumped into in the Me'am Lo'ez, and you know what it says? It says something crazy. It says that the brothers, that Jacob said, let's hunt this animal. And they finally found a wolf. And Jacob says, this wolf must have eaten Joseph. Let's catch him and kill him. And then suddenly God gave the power of speech to the wolf. And the wolf says, don't kill me. My son is gone, and I'm just trying to track him, and I don't know where he is. I didn't eat anybody. I'm just looking for my son. And it's almost like the Midrash shows you that there's like a mirror image in this wolf, right? There's like a wolf, and it's also just tracking its son. Where's my son? That's why I'm here right now. And they didn't hurt this wolf, but like the wolf is the voice of Jacob. It's like I'm just searching for my beloved son. searching for our continuity, for the things that we love so much and we put so much effort into. And my heart goes out to those people whose children suffer, children are sick, children are lost, or children fall in wars or in terrorist attacks. Like recently I heard Rabbi Schnerb, whose daughter was killed right next to him only a few months ago, and they just caught the PFLP group that was responsible for the kind of unit of the Palestinian Liberation Front, the Popular Front for Palestinian Liberation, what of PFLP. They just caught them, and I heard him speak about his beloved daughter. Really broke my heart. And so that brings us to that. Now Judah is then going to become kind of an outcast, and he's going to kind of marry a Canaanite woman. He's going to have these kids, and the first two kids are Er ve'Onan, and they marry this girl named Tamar. Now Tamar, we actually know, is a type of princess. She's a very important person. She's probably, according to the Midrash, the daughter of Shem, the high priest to God in Jerusalem at the time, the son of Noach. She comes from a very, very high, very high group of people. She is really on the people of the earth who believe in God. She is of that priestly clan, who follows the way of God, who has that knowledge all the way from Adam to Noach to Shem and to this incredible lady named Tamar. Tamar is an awesome, awesome character. She's an awesome character. She is just like Rivka, and there's actually a few signs that show that she has a Rivka-like feminine characteristic of total decisiveness, which I respect so much. There's that character back, that character trait from Rivka that we didn't get enough of in the Bible. It's back in this incredible character of Tamar. She marries the first son, and for some reason, God kills him, and then Er. And then she marries the second son, and it seems like it seems like he gets killed as well. Right, I was just checking that. So Er is the first one that she marries, and he gets killed. And then Onan, the second son, also marries her, and he does like this guy Er, something that they do. And it basically says that he would refuse to inseminate his wife, somehow wanting to keep her unpregnant, whether it is because they didn't want responsibility for having children, or he didn't want to give a name for his brother, he didn't want to perform levirate marriage, or he wanted to, you know, keep her not pregnant, or you know, or maybe it was because he used sexuality as an end unto itself and not for procreativeness. There's a linkage between this story and the rabbis make a linkage between that and the issue of masturbation and the religious injunction against that, especially in men, etc. The spilling of seed on the earth. So he gets killed as well. Okay, so now you got two guys are killed by marrying this woman, and Judah doesn't give the third son to her, thinking that she is a black widow. You know, she's a man killer, a man eater, right? Somehow men get killed from being with her. And she realizes that she's not going to get the chance to marry the third brother. She's going to live as a widow out for the rest of her life. So when she hears that Judah has lost his wife and now she died, and now his Canaanite wife, and now he's on the way to shear his sheep, she sets a trap for him, dresses up like a harlot, stands and is at the intersection of the road, on the tzomet, as we say in Hebrew, on the important kind of pathway, and she lures him in, and he comes to her, and he lays with her as though she's a prostitute. So first thing, it's like, oh my God, is this the Bible? Like, I didn't know that, like, an important Jewish man, you know, thought he was laying down with a prostitute. Like, what's that about? And then it keeps going, right? It just keeps going, gets better and better, because not only is there, you know, this sordid tale, but now she becomes pregnant. And that was her thing all along, wasn't it? She wanted to catch the seed, as opposed to the other children who seemingly did not want to impregnate her. In this case, she wanted to catch that seed and be the bearer of the next in line of Judah. Okay, and when he hears somebody, now some kind of evil voice whispers in his ear and says, you know, your daughter-in-law is now pregnant to harlotry, he says, take her out and burn her, since she is of the priestly caste. So, and that's the fitting biblical punishment for a woman from such a high caste to succumb to harlotry. And as she goes out to be burnt, she sends him the signs that he gave her. She asks for his signet ring, his cloak, and his staff. She goes, I am pregnant to the one whose these belong to. She doesn't say by name. She doesn't accuse him out loud. And she does everything not to embarrass him. And he, in turn, was willing to say, hold, stop it. No, 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 no. Do not burn her. She's right. And I was wrong. You know what I mean? I wasn't going to give her my son. And she deserved that right, and then he either never had relations with her again, or he indeed kept on being together with her, maybe married her. But what's clear is that twins are going to be born, and these twins are both righteous twins. Unlike Jacob and Esau, who have a conflict, these are two are together, Zerach and Peretz, and from Peretz's family will come King David. And that line will join up with the line of Peretz will join up at some point with Ruth, the Moabite princess who comes from the folks of Moab, who you remember as the people born through incest, and through that will be the birth of King David and the Messianic line. So that is some awesomely crazy wild stuff. It's not the stuff of Shabbat sermons, right? It's not like you talk about this stuff in front of the kids, right? But I think it's beautiful. I think it's amazing. And I think it's real. And I think it's challenging, and it's sordid, and it's problematic, and it's awesome. And it's really about the complexity of the Torah, the complexity of these characters, and the complexity of Mashiach, who is a complex character, a complex character. And here, a little stab at the good folks who listen to the show of the Christian persuasion, It's like, guys, look at King David. Person who's fighting with issues all throughout his life. Look at the line of King David. If it's Judah, if it's the incestual line of Moab, the daughters of Lot, where they come from, they're nothing like a character who's perfect and immutable and makes no mistakes. No, not at all. It's these characters are, the so-called Old Testament characters are full of complexities and challenges and not at all some kind of perfect figure. In any case, King David himself was an imperfect figure, but an amazing one. And his imperfection is a kind of proof positive of his humanity. In any case, that's one of my favorite stories in the whole Bible. And it's one that so many people don't know, don't understand. People want to gloss over it, but it's exactly that complexity which makes it so beautiful. And we're just touching the tip of the iceberg because there's so much Kabbalah in these stories, so much mysticism. And I'm just touching kind of the tip of the iceberg here at the King David Lounge en route back to the land of Israel, looking into the Torah with very badly lit room, but still enjoying being with you very much. And also enjoying the thought that even if we don't have a regular show, we have some kind of show. And I don't know if you guys are listening, if you like this echo or my little snottiness or whatever it is, but I'm having a smile on my face thinking about some of you, any of you, listening to the show so far. In any case, we learn that in this week's Torah portion that not only Yehuda has kind of these sexual exploits that are challenging, so too does Joseph, but he's going to be challenged by Mrs. Potiphar, who's coming on to him strong, coming on to him real strong. And I love how our rabbis actually find this very aggressive woman who Joseph is like, no, leave me alone. I don't want to cheat on my master. I don't want to take away from him the one thing that he has not put into my hands. But the rabbis say, some of the rabbis say anyway, she meant it for good because she saw in the stars that she was supposed to become, that their seed is going to, that they're going to get together and have progeny. And she was kind of right because it was her daughter, Osnat Bat Potipera, that would be the person who marries Joseph and has that progeny. But on the simple level, a Me Too scenario, but the victim of the Me Too here is Joseph. This lands Joseph into jail because he refuses, and she creates a fake news. Do you see how irrelevant this stuff is? So there's fake news and Me Too, right? The fake news is that Joseph tried to attack her and rape her or whatever it is, and she presents a proof of this piece of clothing. Again, the clothing, right? One piece of proof of clothing is, look at this clothing, Jacob. This is, Joseph is dead. And now, look at this clothing, Mr. Potiphar. Joseph is a rapist, an attacker. And it's the clothes. It's always the clothes that get Joseph into trouble. He gets picked up by his clothes. And the contra to that is, by the way, the tzitzit, which is this piece of clothing that makes you into a like the Jew uniform, the godly uniform, the priestly uniform, is the other side of that. But Joseph always getting in trouble by his clothes, and then he's thrown into that pit, and in that pit, in the dungeon, and in that dungeon there's going to be two guys. There's going to be two guys, and you know, they're both ministers. One is the head of the butler, and one is the baker. And they both have dreams. And these dreams, in some way, match up to the two dreams we've had like two dreams now, right? And by the way, Jacob also had two dreams, right? The dream of the ladder and the dream of the sheep and come back home. Joseph has two dreams, and now he's going to hear two dreams as well. And these dreams are a way of God communicating, but dreams aren't enough. You have to have the interpretation. You have to have the interpretation. And Joseph is known as a person who sees God's messages. God, is, in this kind of epoch, is now speaking in mysteries. He's speaking in mysteries, the mysteries of the dream, the mysteries of the dream. I had a dream about a friend of mine recently, and I told him the next day, and he actually needed that piece of advice that I saw in the dream to tell him. Weird, really weird. That happened just like actually yesterday. I thought to myself, that was really weird. And also seeing Joseph's dream burgers is really weird. In any case, friends, I am looking in this dark room here. There's these clocks. Let me see. Are they even correct? They're not even correct, these clocks. One says Mexico City, one says New York. The middle one says Tel Aviv. Another one says Paris. Another one says Zurich. I would have picked some more important towns around this world. Mexico City and New York are not that different. I would have picked Los Angeles and New York. It's three hours difference. And Tel Aviv in the heart, Paris and Zurich also not so far away from one another. I would have picked some Hong Kong and or Tokyo or something like that. But who cares? The bottom line is that the world is beautiful. It's a beautiful globe, a little tiny planet in a humongous universe, a third planet from the sun. And God has given us life, and He's given us a Torah, and He's given us exile, and He's given us the chance to come back to the land of Israel, to that Tel Aviv airport, which brings us to Yerushalayim, the holy city, and the holy mountain range. And the stories of this week's Torah portion, the stories that have Hebron, the stories that have Shechem, stories that have Dotan, and then the sail down to Egypt, and the travel down to Egypt, and the relationship between Egypt and the land of Israel. It's a beautiful world with a beautiful story. And we thank God so much for being part of this story. I am so thankful to be sitting here with you. And I'm going to stop the recording now and head to catch my flight. You are listening to the Yishai Fleischer Show on the Land of Israel Network. I want to thank Moshe Herman, Ben Bresky, Tabitha. And I want to thank the Hebron Fund for bringing me out here. I hope that we helped raise some money for a good cause. And that raising of the money is not just raising money. It's also raising connectivity. And people thanked me. And people felt good about giving money. Some people gave small money, other people gave big money. But people gave their blood and sweat. And that means that they also said it's important to be connected to the forefathers and mothers. And that's why you're listening to the show. Because we're connecting to the Bible, to the land of Israel, to ancient ideas that are so relevant still today, that are really happening in many ways today more than they've happened in the last 2,000 years. And I urge you also to donate to the Land of Israel Network, to the Yishai Fleischer Show. You can go to my website, yishaifleischer.com, hit the donate button, and it's just about to be the new secular year, so it might be a good time to throw off some extra charity and write it off and do all that fancy stuff, and to have a good new secular year as well, a blessed year of parnassah, of welfare from above. So check out yishaifleischer.com. Please help. Please help make the show possible and all the other stuff we do, some of which is secret stuff and good stuff. So you are part of it. And in general, you are part of the land of Israel and the story of Israel wherever you are. I want to bless you and thank you so much for being with me. Thank you for bearing with my mini cold and this funny room and the flight and all that. And it's been a pleasure to be with you. More great stuff is on the way. And Shabbat Shalom. Oh, yeah, send me a little email, yisha@thelandofisrael.com. Why don't you write to me, refuah shlema, which means be fully healed, get a full health, clean bill of health from this little mini cold that I've gotten. And, of course, there's going to be some wonderful jet lag. All that is, let's wish each other health. Why don't you do yisha@thelandofisrael.com and #health. #health, and I'm blessing you with health as well. Health and joy and success. More great stuff is on the way on this great network, broadcasting from the King David Lounge. King David Lounge, here in JFK, on the way to the Holy Land. God bless you guys. Shalom.
We must always take sides, says Elie Wiesel. Neutrality helps the oppressor, never the victim. Silence encourages the tormentor, never the tormented. And if you've been listening for any time at all, then you know I'm not one to keep silent. Because I'm Rav Mike Foyer, and this is The Jewish Story.
Join Rav Mike Foyer for the best Jewish history podcast, The Jewish Story, on the Land of Israel Network at thelandofisrael.com.